Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, July 12th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over and over again, absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, that will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do that soon and often because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives when they apply these tools to their lives. And it frequently leads to comments or questions or answers or testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can either email us at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. Or you can call us at 563-999-3581 and press 1 on your phone. I will see the little icon of a hand by your phone number, turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code. And we appreciate it when people do that. It just makes it easier for us to live into our intention with this work. And the intention with this work is to be of service. So if there's a way we can be of service to you, please let us know. And we'll take it from there. We will assume that people are getting benefit from it based on the number of people who are calling in and sitting on the switchboard, even if they're not raising their hands. And we'll assume that other people are getting similar benefits to what we have gotten in the application of these tools. So again, the call-in number is 563 888-999-3581. I had a couple of different things to read today. And they're they're tangential to the way of mastery. One of them, I had a patient come in yesterday and talk about from his past. He had a, I guess he was a teenager. Yeah, he was probably high school level or just beyond high school level. And he was working with this young man, and he didn't realize that the young man was as bright as he was. But then all of a sudden, they started talking about, you know, what's your rank in class or what kind of grades you get. Turns out that this young man was vacillated between number one and number two in his high school. And so my patient said to him, well, if you win valedictorian and you give a speech, I'd love to be there to listen to it. Well, sure enough, that's what happened. And so the young man came back and handed my patient a ticket, and he went and listened to this talk. And he said what he remembered most about it was that this high school student was talking about the need to just slow down and be present in the moment. Instead of doing all this multitasking, to just be where you are and truly focus on whatever is going on around you for the moment. So that instantly reminded me of the David Foster Wallace, "This is Water." And this was a commencement speech back in 2005 to the graduating class of Kenyon College. And it's been compared to writings by Hunter Thompson and others. And the full title of it is, "This is Water, Some Thoughts Delivered on a Significant Occasion About Living a Compassionate Life." And it's recommended. You know, it is, he starts out with, "Greetings, parents, and congratulations to Kenyon's graduating class of 2005. There's a story about these two young fish swimming along, and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way. The older fish nods at them and says, 'Morning, boys, how's the water?' Well, the two fish keep swimming on for a bit, and then eventually one of them looks over to the other and says, 'What the hell is water?' That right there, there's your Cohen, right? There is your conflicting, how could these fish who live and breathe and swim in water not know what water is? And so the whole crunch of this, the focus of this commencement speech is how we miss the importance of our lives. Because the importance of our lives is the bulk of our lives. There's a book where the gentleman says, you know, the fact of the matter is a lot of us have a lot of anxiety and fear about the future and potential tragedies befalling us, etc. But the truth of the matter is, statistically speaking, the vast majority of moments in our lives are monotonously good and safe, even for people that live in a war zone. Most of the time, bombs aren't going off. There's fear that they might. Most of the time, they're not being directly shot at. There's the potential that could happen any minute, so they stay in a heightened level of awareness. but especially in those countries like ours where we're not actively in a war zone. You know, we may have our military out on other continents doing warlike activities, but here in the U.S., most of us experience the vast majority of our living, waking moments as monotonously good and safe and simple. Boring, some would say. So that ties in with what we're being asked to pay attention to in the Way of Mastery, because with great regularity, we miss the fact that we are the ones creating our experience of life, and we're creating it by what we're choosing to focus our conscious awareness upon, by the thoughts we're generating and the interpretations we're generating about the life we're living, about the life circumstances that are flowing around us. Now, what is water as a commencement speech is a little bit too long for me to read the whole thing, but I highly recommend that you go to your favorite search engine and type in, you know, just what is water, or Foster Wallace, David Foster Wallace, and it'll come up. It's been replicated. It's been recorded. It's a popular topic for people who want to wake up to living in the moment. It's a nice, lengthy, but a nice reminder that if we focus on worshiping things, we miss a lot. If we focus on the big, exciting things in our lives, we miss a lot. And the real function of education is that we begin to understand how to think and the fact that we can choose the focus of our thoughts. We can either buy into the rat race and all of that conditioning, or, you know, instead of worrying so much about life after death, we can worry about life before death. And the real value of education, which has almost nothing to do with knowledge and everything to do with simple awareness, is that awareness of what is so real and essential, so hidden in plain sight all around us all the time, and we have to keep reminding ourselves, oh, this is water. This is my life. This is not a dress rehearsal. It is unimaginably hard to do this, to stay conscious and alive in the adult world day in and day out, which means yet another grand cliche turns out to be true. Your education really is the job of a lifetime, and it commences now. This is exactly what we're trying to wake up to with the Way of Mastery. If we go to sleep at the helm, and we are at the helm of our lives, we are creating our life experience. It tells us this in the Way of Mastery in the very first lesson, page 5. You experience nothing except that which you've chosen to experience. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And you may not be choosing it with the focus of your conscious awareness, but you might be choosing to focus on things that have nothing to do with what's actually creating your experience or what actually has value for you. And in so doing, you're creating this hallucination, this dream of separation, this set of rationalizations for your negative emotions, and you're arguing for them, and so you stay hopelessly stuck. Right there in the first lesson, it reminds us the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. You are not going to use your conscious logical thought process to solve the problem of your negative emotions. because there is a flaw in that process, and it's literally your emotional state, your experience of life that's being created by where you're choosing to focus your mind energy and how you're choosing to interpret and respond to the flow of life. This is so fundamental that the act of forgiveness, which is a fundamental piece of the Course in Miracles, of the Way of Mastery, forgiveness in this work is to choose to release another from the perceptions you have been creating and projecting upon them. It is therefore an act of dismantling one's false projections, one's negative projections, so that you're no longer rationalizing to yourself that I'm only mad at so-and-so because he or she did this or that. Each time you forgive, which means to dismantle the false perception you have, you take yourself deeper into the recognition of the purity of your own consciousness. You get to see the truth about yourself the more you dismantle the false. And the more you do that work, you begin to see how profoundly you have been coloring and therefore affecting all of your relationships. It's happened because you forgot in a moment that you were the one creating your experience of life, and in that instant, in that moment, projection happens, and your mind creates a picture of your life and the people around you, and it's formulated in such a way as to convince you that the people around you are causing your upset. So the more we can slow down, the more we can actively choose, the more we can learn to observe. I think I was talking yesterday a little bit about David White, the English-Irish poet, and his last name is spelled W-H-Y-T-E. And he was talking about the value of understanding how little we know. And he uses different words for it, but it's basically living in the question. And understanding how, from that questioning perspective, understanding how rigidly we cling to beliefs about our being solid and our being consistent and our value being what we think it is. You know, we pour a lot of mind energy into this set of thoughts about who we are and how we should be related to in the world and how the world should relate to us and how we should relate to others and that other people should bow down to us or we should bow down to others. And we cling to those thoughts and identifications in a way that is highly unproductive. And understanding how much of the flow of life we don't have any control over. And learning to question and to be open to this flow of energy and change and flux, that is a much more effective approach to life than what we've been conditioned to by our culture. So can you wake up and realize that the irritation you're feeling because, you know, coffee grounds spilled as you were trying to make some coffee this morning, or the route you take to work has road construction and so it's all backed up with traffic and you didn't realize that, or you would have left yourself an extra half an hour to travel to work, but now you might be late. In each and every one of these present moments, we have the gift of an opportunity to choose to teach only love. How do you teach only love? This work says we teach only love by sharing only loving thoughts. It doesn't mean we won't have any thoughts that aren't loving. It just means that we'll recognize them as the sparks of the collective consciousness, and will recognize that they don't have any impact on me beyond what I give to them. The more I fight against them, I strengthen them. The more I try to run from them, I add energy to them and strengthen them. The more I just notice them and breathe and soften and get curious about it and choose again something more loving and choose only to share the loving thoughts, then I've made good use of time in this moment. Then I've used my experience of my mind energy, my awareness, my consciousness to bless creation in this moment. To bless myself and others. To ask to be shown how I can be a blessing to myself and others. To ask to be shown how to be taught in this moment by life, by the flow of energy that we call life. The more I wake up to the fact that I'm not just the body, and there's, you know, lesson 13 in our book, The Way of Mastery, or the book, The Way of Transformation, which is the second of three books in this Way of Mastery. And the 13th lesson says, as a title, it says, you are unlimited spirit. Let's just take a moment, or let's take a few readings of this lesson 13 and remind ourselves, we are not what we have been conditioned to believe we are. We are not just a bio-body suit. We are not just a meat sack. We are not just the flesh. And we are certainly not just our collection of thoughts about ourselves. Because, as this book has pointed out in different ways, the way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. Your intellect can only do one thing. It's like what Dr. Michael Rice calls the carbon-based memory. It functions like a hard drive on a computer. All it can do is record what's been put into it and then play it back when it's recalled, when it's called for. You have a capacity to do a lot more than that. You have a capacity to question. You have a capacity to bring the focus of your attention to certain people and objects. And in the way the system is set up right now, as Guy Finley would say, that whatever you bring your attention to will teach you about itself if you stay in that questioning open mode. It happens. It's like gravity. Bring your awareness. As goes my attention, so comes my experience. This is another Guy Finley phrase. We create our experience of life in each moment by how we choose to focus our conscious awareness in that moment. We are creating the dynamic that stirs up for us every negative emotion that we've ever had from the past, or creates new emotions, positive or negative, in the present moment. If I'm willing to wake up, if I'm willing to catch myself, to notice when I go to sleep, notice when I go to autopilot, notice when I'm swimming in water that there's water, notice the air that I breathe, take a moment and notice the temperature of the air, notice the level of humidity in it, notice these faint little tones of scent that I might pick up. Moment to moment, can I slow down and move into the observing, questioning mode? If I can, then I engage life more fully. If I don't, I'm like an automaton. I'm like a robot. I'm like somebody who's had a lobotomy. I'm just playing out the patterns of the past. I'm just reliving. I'm reacting, which is to do again something you've done before. So, the commencement speech by David Foster Wallace. This is water. That's recommended. There were a couple of other things that I had thought of. I'm not sure I'm going to get into sharing those today, but the idea is to be awake and aware. There were some bits of wisdom from the To Kill a Mockingbird story. And this is the 62nd anniversary of Harper Lee's novel, To Kill a Mockingbird. Some of the little nuggets from that book are, you never really understand a person until you consider things from her point of view, until you climb inside of her skin and walk around in it. Another gem from that book is, I wanted you to see what real courage is. It's when you know that you're beaten before you begin, but you begin anyway, and you see it through no matter what. You rarely win, but sometimes you do. Another one, another bit of wisdom from that writing is, people generally see what they look for and hear what they listen for. Another one is, the one thing that doesn't abide by majority rule is a person's conscience. Another one is, sometimes the Bible in the hand of one man is worse than a whiskey bottle in the hand of another. There are just some kind of men who are so busy worrying about the next world that they never learned to live in this one. And you can look down the street you live on and see the results of that. These chunks of wisdom that are so similar to what we're studying in the Way of Mastery, don't look past what you would consider as the monotony, the boringness of your life, because that is your life. And the vast majority of the moments in your life are what some would call monotonously good, simple, and safe. So, we have plenty of time for comments and questions. We've got about 30 minutes left. Our call number is 563-999-3581. And we are being called to live more actively, awake and aware in the moment, through questioning. We are being called to question everything we've ever been taught, everything we think we know. We are being called to understand that it is our choice of where we focus our mind energy and whether we do that with questioning or we do that with certainty, knowing that we're right and someone else is wrong. And that's what creates our experience of life, nothing else. You can choose only between love and fear. You can choose only between love and fear. And then there are these five words that for me summarize the entire Course in Miracles and Way of Mastery. And those five words are as follows. The choice is always yours. The choice is always yours. That's what we're being called to. Can we wake up and recognize that we could create, and we have created, an experience of being victims? we can create any experience we so desire. Doesn't mean it's ever actually happened, just like the dreams that we have at night haven't actually happened. And yet, they seem vivid and very, very real to us. Well, everything about your life that you reach a conclusion of, that you generate a response to, that you generate an emotion about, is your own creation. You can read books like Viktor Frankl's book titled Man's Search for Meaning, and you can find out how even in a prisoner of war concentration camp in Germany in the Second World War, this gentleman chose for love. This gentleman chose for healing. You can read a story of Wild Bill, who was also in one of those camps that was liberated, and they thought, oh my gosh, he must have just gotten here because he's so vibrant and healthy. But when they interviewed him, they found out he'd been there like 11 years. Everybody else was withered and emaciated and starving, but he seemed to have this vibrant health. And they tell the story in the book, The Gentle Art of Blessing, how he was an attorney in the ghetto in Poland, and they brought his family out and killed his entire family in front of him, and he begged to be shot. And they said, no, we need you. You're too valuable because you speak too many languages. And in that moment, after watching his entire family killed right in front of him, he had a choice to make. He chose for love. And he talked about it and said he chose for love because in his work as an attorney, he had seen what hatred, what holding on to hatred, what chewing on hatred, what raging in hatred was doing to people day in and day out. And he decided whether he was going to live for another minute or another day, or another hour, or another year, he was going to choose for love. And the end result was he made it through the trials of that camp with a lot less degradation of his energy system. You can read a book like the book Messages of Life from Death Row, written by Pierre Pratervand, about his letters written right and back and forth with Roger McGowan on death row in Texas for something he never did. 20-some years, I think, he was on death row. And instead of getting overwhelmed by it, instead of giving in to the bitterness and rage at the people that were actively abusing him, the guards, instead of that, what did he do? He chose for love. He chose to direct his mind energy to read spiritual loving messages and to share spiritual loving messages. And he has become a spiritual teacher for hundreds, if not thousands, of people. So how do we get to the point where we're so far off base? How do we get from being unlimited pure spirit, the way this book would talk to us about, in lesson 13, you are unlimited spirit. How do we get from that to this egoic consciousness that fights for what it says is right and creates all these negative emotions and then argues for its right to have them and creates all of our emotional suffering? Well, the Way of Mastery in lesson 16 is titled The Birth of Egoic Consciousness. And the text reads, Beloved and holy friends, it is a joy to communicate with you the way of transformation. Within the word transformation, there is great wisdom. Transformation requires that there be that which abides in form, and you are that. So the prerequisites for transforming are here because you're here. You are spirit. You are that which has come forth as a ray of light from the mind of the Creator, as a sunbeam to the sun. In that formless beginning, you are consciousness itself. You are intelligence itself. You are bliss. You are radiance. You are compassion. You are the potential for endless creativity. You are creation itself. Now, this is the first time that we've been quite so bold. It's the first time that we've described you as that which is the Creator. In this book on Way of Mastery, they're using the word God here, and I've chosen from the beginning to substitute the word Creator for the word God, simply because for most people, it's less emotionally loaded. But you are a part of creation itself. That's the first time that we've been quite so bold. It's the first time that we've described you as that which is creation. This can only mean that what you are in your essence, in your essential being, is creation itself. The next section is titled, The First Level of Creation, Pure Spirit. The very first level of creation is when that which we call God or Abba first began the indescribable, unexplainable mystery of birthing himself forth out of the eternal matrix of his being. The first level of creation was pure spirit, a subtle movement in which a gentle sunbeam begins to emerge from the sun, or a ray of light soundlessly begins to emanate from light itself. In pure spirit, you are unbounded. You are without form. But you are not without consciousness. You're not without self-awareness. In spirit, there is only capital S self. Not self and other, not self apart from form, but simply self. Radiant, shimmering, unbounded, alone, and yet not lonely. Rather, filled with self, filled with creation, filled with God, filled with love, filled with connection. That first level of creation never changes. It is as the creation itself. For the sunbeam is as the sun, and the ray of light is as the light. A momentum, though, has begun, a momentum extending from the pure potentiality of all that creation is. For love seeks only to extend itself. Love seeks only to extend itself. It's as though it's the expansion of the universe that they're mapping with the Webb telescope these days. They're getting us incredibly vivid pictures and detailed of this expanding universe. And it's just constantly expanding. And that's what love is. Love is creation. Creation is love. Love seeks only to extend itself. Extension is an activity. It is a movement. And for there to be extension, there must necessarily have been created what you call space. But even at this level of creation, the space of which we speak is not quite what you would perceive of in your mind as you think of that which contains planets whirling around your sun, etc. Rather, at this level of creation, it's more like a mathematical concept. It was the idea of space in which extension of thought could occur. There were not yet planets, there were not yet suns or galaxies, there was not yet a single atom or molecule of matter. There was pure thought, pure love, pure being, beginning to entertain, and I emphasize that word for a certain reason, beginning to entertain the idea of pure space, pure extension, unlimited, unbounded, forever. There was pure spirit, and that is what you are, now and forever. Spirit does not change. There is that which in you, right here, right now, even as you are hearing these words, even as you perceive yourself as a body, standing or sitting in a chair, beyond all that you see with your physical eyes, all that you are aware as and within the body, beyond the activity of the surface level of the mind, in which there is a firing of the neurons of the brain, almost without ceasing, so that the mind seems to never be without images and thoughts. All of that is spirit. Far beyond this planet and yet right where this planet abides, far beyond this universe and yet right where this universe resides, far beyond all dimensions, the infinite dimensions of creation, and yet right here where those infinite dimensions exist, spirit is. Always was, always will be. Spirit is. Here is found what I have often referred to as, quote, the real world, close quotes. Here, peace abides eternally, with perfect consistency and without interruption. Hence is the living reality. Right here is the living reality, which has been reflected in the sentence, I and my Creator are one. In other words, when consciousness transcends its perception of itself as being only conditioned experience, being only the forms of existence, such as the body-mind, or the particular sense of self as separate from all other selves, the blade of grass, the cloud in the sky, the rock upon the ground, when consciousness transcends this sense of itself, it abides not in a thinking relationship. It does not observe spirit as something else and then says, oh, so that's what I am. Great. That involves thought. That involves comparison. That involves constriction and judgment. Rather, with consciousness, with spirit, there is a living sense in which consciousness as such, as the capital S self, rests in the capital S self, and it simply knows. It has awareness. For in this sense, only knowledge is immediate, and it is not mediated by any concept, form, or experience. It's knowing, as defined very differently than the intellectual accumulation of knowledge, than the applying words to an experience, comparison, judgment, valuation. That's not the knowing they're talking about here. They're talking about the deeply experiential, present awareness of the truth of what is. There's a living sense in which consciousness as such, as the self, rests in the self, and it simply knows. only knowledge is immediate and not mediated by any concept, form, or experience. This is not your thoughts about what's happened. This is just the experience of what's happened. In such a moment, and it only takes a moment, there is immediate awakening to the reality of the real world, caps, all caps, real, all caps, world. In some form, and notice I said some form, consciousness then dances back into the extension of spirit and into the extension of reality, into creativity, into creation. In the human form, it can say, I and my Father are one. There are many such statements within the human family that have been uttered to express that awakening and that reality. What they're calling us to here is softening our hold on everything we think we are, on all of our judgments about ourselves as good, bad, right, wrong, better than, worse than, tall, short, heavy, light. Smart, stupid, bitter, loving, questioning all of that and understanding that our true nature is not any one of those things, is not even the sum of all of those things put together. Our true nature is the ability to have awareness of the experience. Our true nature is consciousness, is awareness. Our true nature is not what we think about ourselves. It is not subject to interpretation and evaluation. It just is. So there is this movement of consciousness. There is movement of awareness. There is extension of awareness. The text goes on and says, the next section is titled, The Creation of the Soul. And the text reads, Now, in this ceaseless movement from that which never moves, as the ray of light emerges from the light divine, it is unbounded, it is eternal, it is unobstructed. In the very desire to be creative, to extend creativity ceaselessly, and that is what creation is. Spirit begins to condense or descend, and these are both very spatial terms. And as he just finished saying, at this point in the development of consciousness and movement, there is no such thing as space like depth and distance and large versus small. There is this experience of awareness extending. And again, we're now using a language that finds its source on your side of the fence. That is, on the side of the fence of phenomenal existence, not on the side of the fence of spirit. Spirit is not bound by language. And language is not required in spirit. Spirit contains its dance as the mind of the creator entertains the extension of creation. And spirit begins to condense into something that has never yet occurred. The thought, and again, we are still operating at a level of pure thought, pure potentiality, the thought, and there is not yet the deep darkness of the space of your universe or any dimension whatsoever, but this energy that we're calling thought begins to condense into a thought of individuation. The dream of separation is born here. we dream of things that never happen. We dream that we're separate from the world around us, the people we see and talk and interact with, the desk in front of us, the chair we're sitting on, the tree we walk by. We dream that we're separate from those things, and yet that dream of separation is no more real than the nightmare or fantasy dream you had last night. The text goes on and brings a little image. Perhaps you've seen in your television commercials when milk is being poured into the glass in a slow motion, and as the milk hits the glass, it begins to move back up the sides of the cup, and it begins to fill. And at the last moment, when the carton is tilted back and the pouring has stopped, the motion that has been started creates the phenomenon of a circular drop of milk, which arises and, for a very temporary moment, it seems to become separated from the body of milk in the glass itself. It emerges for a split second. And you who are watching the screen in this slow motion, you have the awareness of an individuated drop of milk that seems to exist completely independent of the body of the milk itself. And then in the next moment, it drops back into the body of milk, and you lose awareness of it as a separate thing, a separate drop of milk. But it is still milk. From your place of perception, it merely looked, it just looked as though it had separated its existence from the other milk in the glass. Now, that is an analogy, of course, since the soul is not made of milk, tongue in cheek, but it does create a picture for you of what occurs when the body of spirit continues in its entertainment of creativity, out of which emerges what we have called the soul. The soul is the first subtle inception of the thought of individuation. The soul is the first subtle inception of the thought of individuation, and that which is an individual expression of the fullness of spirit, which is light, which is the creator. Why would this happen? All for the joy of extending creation, that the one might be aware of itself in an endless variety of form. This is where it begins, the delight of creation. This is what you are. In pure soul, there is only pure potentiality. There has not yet been what you would know as experience. There is, however, the first subtle awareness of the one, capital S, self, being aware of itself. So this is a set of thoughts about how consciousness, and therefore each and every one of you listening, has come into existence through the process of creation, through the extension of the one mind, the one creative force that everything arises from. You know, we as human beings with our science, we are programmed with thoughts about the separation and delineation and comparison and competition. And we give a lot of value to the thoughts we create about how things are different from us, different from each other, etc. And what this work is trying to help us understand is That's a dream we're creating. That's not the truth. The truth is there is only the force of creation. There is only the one consciousness. The truth is we are all connected. So, is this what really happened? I don't know. No one will ever know for sure. Are we able to live in that questioning? Is it possible that something like this is closer to the reality of our lives than what we have been led to believe by our religions or by our science or by our philosophy? I don't know. And it's okay for me to live in the question. As a matter of fact, it's highly preferable. Living in the question is highly preferable to walking around determined to convince people that I know, and I know better than them. Especially when you consider how little I'm actually able to be aware of. Right? Even if I was able to be aware of everything that hit my senses only record a fraction of what actually is. So, we will continue slowly with Lesson 16 because it is a lot of this theoretical reframing about your existence and your awareness and the dream of separation and how you got here. And I would encourage people, if you haven't done this yet, to check out the images that are coming in and how the scientists are talking about what the new Webb telescope is teaching them. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So if you need a little bump or boost to be able to say, I really don't know what the heck I'm doing. I really have no idea what's going on. Moving toward that divine ignorance that the Way of Mastery calls us to. If you need any help with that, check out the Webb telescope and check out what the scientists are saying about how much of the sky is represented in these pictures you're seeing. There's a scientist that was interviewed that said something like, well, it's either if you hold up a ping pong ball or a grain of sand at arm's length, the amount of the sky that's being blocked out by that grain of sand or ping pong ball, that's what's being represented in that first image that they brought back of the Webb telescope. So, we're about to move into our second hour. I appreciate everyone who's been here, reading along, listening along. I'd like to remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And I'll say hello to Jeannie Rice.
Hi. Thank you. Appreciate you.
You're very welcome and deserving. Have a great show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. Today is Tuesday, July the 12th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. And we'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in. I'll direct you to the website, whyagain.org. And there's a lot of things that have shifted and changed. If you have trouble finding something, please drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org. And I'll assist you in finding it or turn something around where it's easier to find. But just let me know, or if you find a link that's not working. And at this time, I'm going to welcome Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. And welcome, everybody. Honored that you're here once again as we carry on this conversation about first century Aramaic forgiveness and all the tools that correlate that go along with that that process. We're honored that you're here to spend some time with us, and we certainly invite you to push one and ask any questions that you have, share how we can support you, what's going on in your world as we move forward and take a look at the next level of understanding the application of these tools. And returning home has been an interesting journey this last week. Awesome to come home to gardens just overflowing with awesome actual food. Pretty cool, pretty sweet. And delighted that you're here to be part of this conversation. The access to the tools of first century Aramaic forgiveness are, we've made it as freely available as we possibly can to our website, whyagain.org. You'll find you can engage in, up in the upper left-hand corner of the page, push the Start Here button, and you'll be looking at the a series of links that will walk you through the whole forgiveness process. Everything that we've learned about over the last 50 years about forgiveness is there to be had at the push of a button. You can do the forgiveness process right there on our website, and or you can download the worksheets from the website, print them, and do them live. You can go to our website, go to your app store on your phone and type in the words Heartland, one word, H-E-A-R-T-L-A-N-D, Aramaic, A-R-A-M-A-I-C, forgiveness. And so type in Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll be looking at the world's only forgiveness app. Take it and put it to work. And as you put it to work, you'll find that there's nothing to be believed in what we're doing. We are taking this ancient technology and putting it into a form where people can simply, you know, fill in the blanks, put the tool to work right there on your phone. And as you do that, you'll find that deeper and deeper levels of awareness of the internal dynamics of your mind become available, and that there is, you know, almost universally in the theologies over the years, there have been instructions on how to access a power that resides inside of you that is beyond what your mind can comprehend, beyond what your mind is capable of. And that power has been called by many names. You know, our work specifically comes out of the first century Aramaic language, and the Aramaic language was the language of all of the Old Testament wisdom keepers. It was the language of the Yeshua, who is the focal point. They call him Jesus, but his name wasn't Jesus. Hail Zeus, Jesus. It was Yeshua. And he taught about this feminine elemental force inside of us that if we called upon it, in Aramaic it was Ruka de Kutcha. The Greeks translated those words as Holy Spirit, but we're stepping back from the theological implications that have been put into this technology and recognizing that it is a technology of the mind. It's just factual where we live in the world. So this inner source of wisdom, you know, in Aramaic, Ruka de Kutcha translates as a feminine elemental force in us that, one, undoes the effects of our errors, and two, teaches us the truth. So that power has been referred to by many different names. You know, the ancient Hindus called it the inner guru. The Tibetan Buddhists called it the personal deity. The Quakers called it the still small voice. Psychologists, even they have a name for it. It's called the higher self. But whatever name you use, the implications are the same. We have within us this remarkable source of wisdom that if we can be free from our minds even for a moment, will begin to instruct us. And when we're willing to yield the content of our minds to that inner power, then, and so often, humans have tried to get people to look outside of themselves, but the recognition here that it is within you. So a wisdom that can guide and assist if we're willing to listen, if we're willing to learn how to recognize it and draw on it. The understatement of the century is that in our modern world is that the mind is a poorly understood device. But we do know that, like the operation of a computer, if its inputs are poor, the internet connection, the modem, is weak or faulty, every function of the computer is unstable. And so it is with the mind. And what we're looking to do is to understand the mindsets that are available to us to cause the inputs to be solid and stable for the mind, and therefore for the output of the mind to be solid and stable in support of the truth of who we are as human beings. And to establish the truth of who we are, all you need to do is hold a newborn child. And when you hold that newborn, if you really get quiet, pass your own mind's concepts of the child and tap into the essence of the child, you find that you're now interacting with the profound presence of active love, the essential nature of every one of us. Created essence, that presence of love, has a wisdom to share beyond what the mind can produce. When you realize that the mind simply replicates, unless it's connected to a higher source of wisdom, the mind simply replicates whatever's in it. You know, if I say, don't think about the color of your car, what moves in your mind? Something about the color of your car. And that's content from the past. What we're looking to do with this technology is to understand who we are, how we truly function, and where this higher source of wisdom resides, and to recognize that it resides within us. And that it's our birthright to utilize it in every aspect of our lives. And that forgiveness, the place in the whole process for forgiveness, is that forgiveness is the removal of those energetic patterns that oftentimes have been around in our family bloodlines for generations, in our culture for maybe thousands of years, and how to remove those energetic dynamics and return to the truth of who we are, and to make space, to make room for the truth of who we are, to incarnate into physiology, to really truly, I'm looking for the right word to recognize it, to become the source point, to become the impetus to all behavior, to all sensation. And so when there's something in the structure from the past that's based in any form of hostility or fear, then that content is content that you want to be forgiving, and not in the sense that the culture uses the word forgive, we're going to let it off the hook. No, forgiveness has nothing to do with letting anyone off the hook, including yourself. But rather, it's the methodology by which you remove content that never belonged in your mind in the first place. So that's the nature of our inquiry. That's where we want to go. If you download the app, again, in your app store, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, you can do the forgiveness worksheet step by step. And again, nothing to believe. Just fill in the blanks and watch what happens to your mind. Watch the shifts that occur. And we're here to support those shifts occurring in each and every person on the planet, at least to make the technology available so that people can understand and know that those shifts can happen, that those changes can occur. So, Miss Jeannie, how are you this morning? This afternoon, I guess.
I am good. Your voice sounds hoarse, more so than it does in person.
It is a little bit hoarse, yes. I'm still hoarse from yesterday. So throat is still a little bit sore. So I just invite everybody to
raise your hand and ask a question
support.
So he doesn't have to talk so much.
Okay, well, let's go for it. You're out there in listener land.
Okay.
If you're on one of those stations where we can't hear you. Oh, let's go for it.
Miss Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Hi, it's your usual.
Welcome.
Michael, don't talk anymore, Michael. Shut up. Okay, you have to stop.
Okay.
It sounds as if it hurts to talk. I hope it doesn't.
No, actually,
anyway.
Actually, it sounds pretty froggy, but it's comfortable.
Oh, good. That's good.
So then we're going to just turn the show over. You're going to do it from here?
Yep.
Okay, it's all yours.
Well, actually, I need some serious help. It's a Jacob issue again. And my Al-Anon stuff is helping it. Dr. Tim's whole show was on such a level, I felt as if I was just terribly limited by my ability to feel my way into what he was saying, because I'm in a situation again with Jacob that, you know, I have a lot of worksheets to do. He texted me yesterday to say that he'd gotten a very bad review on a scene that he had done. And we talked about it for a while, and I said something. I won't delineate everything. I could read them to you. They're pretty shocking after a while. But he called me a jerk, and he was saying awful things about this director, you know, using swear words having to do with female anatomy, et cetera. I know what I said. I said, please, whatever you're thinking, please don't use those words. You don't use those words to me, please, or anybody else for that matter. And he said basically that I'm a jerk. So our deal has been that we give him allowance on the condition that he's respectful to everyone, mostly us, because we're the targets. The people he cares about the most, depends upon the most.
Right.
He sticks it to us. So I said, well, what just happened? Did you just shoot yourself in the foot? And he said, no, you did. And he, of course, deflects any responsibility. And so he got nasty, and I said, Jacob, I can't talk to you when it's like this. I'm going to get off. Let's talk later. I hung up. He starts texting me, talk about rude. You hung up on me, you know, and all this stuff. And so I didn't answer, and I haven't answered, and there's been no further discussion. Today is his allowance day. He really needs his allowance. And I'm getting ready to handle his call, which will probably come. And I'm having trouble not getting triggered and scared on his behalf. Whatever he calls me, that isn't the big deal. It's that he is showing me how he gets, you know, power person dynamic. He becomes his father in his father's rage. And that's how he's going to treat people in the world, I guess. And it's going to be very hard for him. My main feeling is just shock, because we've had 3 good weeks, shock that he's gone back to being what he's been diagnosed as, which I've been thinking, no, perhaps he isn't, is an addicted bipolar person. And I know you don't like labels, neither do I, but when I read about bipolar, this is what's happening. And in my Al-Anon books, it's like he's a classic example of baiting the other person so that they will end up getting mad, and then he can say, see, what you've said hurt my feelings so much, I'm going to go drink. And I know he probably had a bender last night. I don't know. But I'm calling you, and, you know, I feel as if I've gone to square one again. I've listened for years to what you teach, and I'm not in very good shape. And I don't want to have you have to talk about it, Michael, because you shouldn't be talking. But anyway, I took up a
minute.
No,
actually, my voice is fine. I know it sounds horrible. Okay, my voice is fine. No, my throat's feeling fine. It's just a little bit on the hoarse side.
Yeah. Okay.
So what worksheets have you done since this conversation occurred and is hanging up?
I haven't done any worksheets. I've been reading my Al-Anon, which is to drop the rope, disengage, give up any goals. That's part of the worksheet, but I haven't written anything down. No, I haven't. I guess
no.
You're going to ball me out because I haven't done it. Okay.
No, not
okay,
in the least. No, I understand. I understand the frustration and, you know, where do I go from here? And I think Al-Anon would say then, you know, disengaging means you actually disengage. And it's unfortunate to think of the damage that he could do to himself if he isn't held accountable, if he doesn't change or do something about his mode of behavior. And, you know, obviously he's under stress, and that's what comes
yeah.
up as a power person dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I felt I wanted from Dr. Kim was practical advice, blow by blow, which is not always what that radio show is for. Neither is yours, although you're much more oriented, I think, toward that, or dragging out the tools and putting them right to work. Dr. Kim is doing these readings, and they have been fantastic. But
right.
they were above me this time. I was just wallowing yeah. in the stuff. So
yeah.
I'm just hoping to be loving, holding a loving space, not going into fear. I'm projecting his whole life as being, he's not going to ever get well. Those are my thoughts. I've got a goal of him getting well, and he may or may not get well. You've talked about this, too. You said you have to be ready to even have his take his own life. Well, he might. He might do it to show me how bad I am. That I took away the
yeah.
one thing that
it's on. It's all a form of vengeance.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if that's the modeling that one had as a small child, that if that's what, you know, so to speak, configured the operating system of the mind, the power person, then
mm-hmm.
under stress, you know, unfortunately, that's what comes in and takes over. And I guess my thought is perhaps shift to another one of the tools, maybe text him and let him know that you're not answering any more texts or any more phone calls, but you're sending him an email, and maybe sit down and do a really thorough, you know, follow one of the modelings of the responsibility communication, you know, take the responsibility communication tools and put that to work.
Write a letter.
Yeah, you write a letter to him via email
mm-hmm.
where mm-hmm. he can't be, you know, instantly abusive, and he's going to have to take some time to look and read in order to get any form of communication, and let him know perhaps that the only form of communication is acceptable is an answer to your email, a serious interaction over this email and your responsibility communication, and what he's going to do about it, and maybe put the ball in his court. And unfortunately, if he just rages on with his old behavior, then if you're going to follow through with, you know, the advice that Al-Anon would give you, and if you're going to, you know, put an end to being the object of abuse, and that's a tough one, then, you know, we're going to interact on this, and this is the only communication I'm willing to have with you at this point. Might be another option.
Mm-hmm.
So take a total
yeah.
of the tools you haven't used with him previously, perhaps responsibility communication. And, you know, he can say as often as he wants, you know, we're all familiar with the classic alcoholic that after they've done their damage, you know, the next morning they wake up and realize what's happened. They come out of their stupor and they're so sorry and they're so repentant and I'm never going to do it again. And I believe, my take is that in my years of working with alcoholics is the majority of them are such tender and sensitive people, and there was no place for them to land. And so they mm-hmm. simply carry that power person dynamic. And until there's a space for that pain to open and they're willing to do something about it, because they can say, oh, I'm never going to do it again. But if that's what's in the operating system, so to speak, And they don't go in and reconfigure the operating system, you know, forgive, change something in the operating system. Then the next time those conditions are met, that's what the mind's going to spit out again. I mean, that's just, you know, until somebody's willing to go in and do the work, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Where's his mom?
Exactly.
Where's his mom at in this conversation? Yeah.
Oh, she's doing Al-Anon like mad, and he's been mistreating her too. And she doesn't answer his texts, and she's just hoping that he'll get a hold of himself. We talk to each other about this.
Right.
But she's
how is she doing with it
on
all?
On board. She is more centered and well than I am. She's watched this more closely for longer, and she watched it with her husband. He would take a gun to his head and say, I'm going to pull the trigger if you don't X, Y, or Z. And then the next day he would apologize on his knees with tears. I mean, it was very dramatic.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah. And I'll never do it again.
And then and he's still doing that, which gives me hope in a way, because it probably means that Jake probably wouldn't actually pull the trigger, I'm hoping. But it may never stop. Of course, it's not fruitful to have those thoughts and fears. That just cripples everybody. But that's the thing. I want to be the space of love if he calls. If he calls, I've planned to answer the phone. I have always answered the phone. Maybe I shouldn't. You know, maybe that's what you say is right, that he's distractible. That's the weird thing. If I had the presence of mind to say, hey, Jake, before you say any more about that, tell me about the audition. What was it like? Who said what to whom? He would have shifted right out of that attack mode and gotten into his regular self. What is that? I don't know. But distraction is recommended by Al-Anon. Drop the rope, distract, and, of course, disengage if you have to. But he's usually pretty good about just all of a sudden having a normal conversation, having just reamed you out and said horrible things. So, anyway. Thanks for listening.
In the arena of multiple personality research, they've recognized that there's a tendency to have multiple personalities depending on types of abuse that were done in childhood. And that if you can, you know, when you say distractible, my understanding of that from that perspective would be that you're able to say words that resonate him back into his normal personality. And, you know, it's like throwing a switch. He shifts into that other personality until the next time the stress is high enough that one of the multiples comes up, one of the alternate personalities. And tough situation when he's that engrossed in it.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I can write that letter. I will do that. I'll do that. That's
that might just be another way to approach him and, you know, sooner or later to change behavior, he's going to have to do. And, you know, over the years, psychologists have told me that one of the few things that they've ever seen, or the only thing they've ever seen that integrates multiple personalities, is the worksheet process. So if he can get on a track of starting to deal with this extreme state of rage and abuse, then perhaps he can begin to move into a space where he can remove it. Otherwise, it's kind of like a computer. You know, you open a file and the file's there. What's in the file is going to run.
Yeah, that's just like what happens. Okay, Michael, well, I don't need to take any more of your time on that one. I'll just do what you suggest, and I will listen to the rest of the show.
All right, dear heart, we cherish you and reach our hearts in your direction, extend love in his direction. And just hold the space.
Thanks.
I wish there was more we could do at this point. All right, young lady.
Yeah, I understand. Thanks.
All righty. Blessings.
Thanks.
All right, Miss Jeannie, do we have anything else happening in the phone queue or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us? Any
it
questions from the app?
It is all quiet.
Nope, I just went out and checked, and there are no questions, and nobody has a hand up. So somebody press one. Oh, a hand just went up. I believe it is Dusty 904. You're on the air.
Well, aloha, Jeannie, Michael.
Hey, hey.
People listening.
Nice to hear your voice.
Hey. Yes, thank you. You too. I'm really glad, and I'm glad you could be there for that lady. I liked your idea of the emails, so there couldn't be a snappy black comeback, and I thought that was a very good idea, just listening, and although I don't know the situation much. But at any rate, that's not specifically why I called. I have been wondering for a while if in the mindset of the Aramaic world,
right,
was what angels, I mean, you hear so much about it in other ecclesiastical sort of writings, but angels, I wonder if there's a word for that and if you know anything about that mindset relative to that in that world.
It's not something that I've spent a lot of time with, but my best understanding of the word that the Greeks translated as angels would be that they are thoughts directly from the Creator's mind, as opposed
yes,
to creatures,
okay.
That they'd be thoughts keyed to, based in love, to become available in our minds because we're willing to listen to them. And from there,
yeah,
you know, basically...
Yeah.
You're into, you know, if you go back to the idea of Christ in Aramaic is the name of an office. You know, if I ran for mayor and I won the election, you would call me Mayor Rice. Not that mayor is my name, but mayor is the office that I occupy. And so if you look at Yeshua, he was the first one in, you know, in public view in this culture. That lived in that mind that was the same mind that's in us that is listening to, you know, what has been called our higher angels, our better angels. And when we're tied into that, we're functioning out of a different mind than carbon-based memory. And those thoughts that come from, you know, my take would be what Yeshua did was he listened and he functioned out of literally the mind of the Creator. And it's our birthright to do that. And when we're doing that, that would be the best of my understanding. It's not something I've spent a lot of time. You know, there's the translation work that we've had done so far from the Kabor's manuscript has been somewhat limited. The project ran out of money back in the 70s. So that's not an arena that I've spent much time in, but that's my best understanding. Is it when we're listening
okay,
to
well,
those?
I appreciate that. And I liked... you know, it's the thing about the word, you know, people say Jesus Christ, and it's almost like I'm just going to parrot what you said because I've been trying to tell people this forever. It's not a name like Joe Johnson, that Christ is a state of consciousness. It's like you said, an office, of, so to speak. It's like... King David, it would be Jesus the Christ, or you know, Yeshua the Christ, and
exactly,
and it's the Christ part that counts. That's it.
Yeah,
and I yeah. feel like that's available. I will tell you, as far out as it may sound to people listening, but I literally coded in the hospital as a baby. I died. I was gone for a while, long enough
right.
the doctors told my mom not to bring me back. But I have always, always had a memory, and it's not biologically based, of transitioning from this world going to the next world. I guess if I was a Viking, it would have been the Rainbow Bridge. I think it depends on your... on a lot of other factors, but at any rate,
right.
in that, out of the what the Hindus call the cloudy osa came this brilliant light, brilliant light, and I heard the word Christ. I didn't hear Yeshua. I didn't hear any of that. I just heard Christ, and that's all there was. And it came out in light. There was this being of wonderful light held me, and I was dying. It brought me back. It took me to make a detailed story very short. It was that infusion of love and higher consciousness, and this Christ brought me back to life and took me back into the world just before it was too late. I'd already crossed into the death zone, but I was still redeemable. So I have this sense of this effulgence of that Christ consciousness. It's just, and I think effulgence is just, you know, brilliant white. I don't know how else to say it. But yeah, it's an office. It's a title. And that's, you know,
if you listen to Paul,
really think,
yeah, if you listen to Paul, Paul says, the mind, this is the Greek-oriented translation, the mind of Christ in you, your hope of glory. Now, many people want to make that Jesus mind, but that's not what was being referred to. It's like, that is the mind of the Creator in each and every one of us that's available to us, as opposed to functioning out of carbon-based memory and perception. And
yeah,
it's carbon-based memory content that blocks it until it's rewired to truth. It's carbon-based memory, genetic memory, all the stuff of the world that blocks with a loud emotional noise that still small voice that's available to all of us. And functioning out of it, especially under stress, is just quite a challenge.
Yes. And it's, yeah, it is. It's available to all of us. And I'm going to say one thing now that I hardly ever tell, because I usually I would be concerned about being completely ununderstood. But when I heard the word Christ, and this being came and held me and infused me with this light, I feel it sounds silly, but I remember the Mickey Mouse Club. Well, I feel like I'm a member of the Christ Club. You know what I mean? And because that's Christ, and that was a gift to me. I can't say I earned anything at 1 year old.
I hear you.
It's just pure. And I heard two other words that were an afterthought. And this is the part that some may or may not even want to hear, but it said, after it said Christ, it was almost like it said a Christ. That's what I heard. This being was a Christ, which ties in a little bit with what you said, in the sense that it's available to all of us. So my sense of the Christ consciousness, it's an omnipresent thing. And so much love. I mean, just, I can't say I understand it particularly, but I just have the edges of it available to me, and I am very grateful.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, it's not something to be understood. It's something to be experienced. I mean, the intellect can't even start to comprehend. You know, that's where another point Paul makes. He says, whether in or out of the body, I knew not, for I saw things which I could not utter. It's like, it doesn't translate very well, you know, when one has an opening like that, a spiritual experience, and it's so exciting, and you go to share it with somebody, and it's like, well, let's see, there actually aren't any words, and then you hear Yeshua saying to the disciples, who are saying, tell me, he says, there's so many things you want to hear, but you can't hear them yet. Get out of the brain
right.
cells.
Exactly. Yes. And I personally make the mistake all the time. You think I'd figured out after 112 years or whatever it's been here. that I look at people, and because I never look down, I came out of the box. I don't look down at people. I don't look up. I try to look straight across, and I hopefully can see qualities better that way, and I don't get caught in hierarchical ways of being.
Doesn't translate into words very well.
No, it doesn't really. And the only other time that I've had a really powerful, I mean beyond powerful, experience with Christ consciousness. I mean, I meditate and I with it as best I can, and I can go into that somewhat, but it seems like in times of greatest crisis is when this consciousness will show up. And when I was in the Army, I was faced with a real big crisis of faith. I mean, this is about the most intense moment as an adult ever. And the Christ presence made itself known along with something I can only call the Holy Spirit, which is, I don't know what else to call it. And but these things are, I don't think, are relegated to just one biological form, person, is my point, I guess. Like you said, I mean, you have it, I have it, everybody has it available to them or in some way or another. But I guess the conditions have to be just right.
Well, I think the willingness to listen to something other than, because to me, like a big opening is when I realize that everything that I see or I think I see outside of me is a construct of my mind. And that if my mind is using corrupt data to build this construct, obviously it's a lie. So just the willingness to go, maybe there's something else true here. In fact, there's an interesting lesson in the Course in Miracles. It says, I hope that I'm wrong. I hope what I'm seeing now is an error so that I have room in me, you know, this is paraphrasing it, but so I have room in me for another perspective to see something different. And I'm willing to be shown something different. And when I see that something different, it becomes like there's so much light in it, it's obvious that the construct I was looking at and trusting, and I've been taught by the world to trust forever, is false.
I love that, Michael. That was nicely put. I was reading a bunch of stuff on quantum physics, and you know it really boils down to every one of them from Max Planck, who started that the quantum theory way back,
right.
And they all say the same thing. There is no matter. I mean, they get down to the electron level, and you know, and it's just an energy, a thought form, energy, and you wouldn't know it if you hit your head against a wall or something. But that at the quantum level, it's just energy, and it's based. And it's funny because I read three or four top-notch, I mean, leading physicists who all said the same thing, that there had to be, it implies consciousness. When you think of something, you look at something, you think about it, whatever, you change it a little bit. There's an interaction of whether we know it or not at the atomic level,
yes.
They're saying. And I find it very interesting that the quantum mechanics, all that leading-edge science stuff, as theoretical and mathematical as it may be, is starting to catch up with the true ancient mystery traditions, you know.
Exactly.
Isn't that funny? I mean, it's...
Oh, absolutely.
I love it.
And
when I think
you know, when you, Now, when you tie it in, you know, one of the nicest blessings I got in my work years ago, I used to keynote at a conference called Global Science, and 1 year, Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM, showed up at the conference and had this camera with which you take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. You don't have to go very far to go, well, obviously, if a high energy wave is leaving my mind when I think a thought, whatever I put my attention to is going to be touched by that high energy wave. It's going to change it. It's going to shift it. And so how much has got to do with the automatic decision system that just kicks out the garbage from generations, or when I get conscious, go to that other mind in me, the still small voice, that I could be sending a totally, completely different energy, and it's going to transform whatever it is. And the more powerfully I'm focused there, the more intensely I can hold that higher perspective, the more intensely it's going to impact and change what's already appears to be existent in the world, because everything that appears to be existent is just a state of organized energy. And if I send a different quality of organized energy, that sure of that, the literal structure is going to change.
I hope people listening understood what you just said, because it's really powerful, and down to at the human level for me, I live alone in this place right now, and have for a while. So I'm always, and I'm a thinker. I find myself thinking about something all the dang time, and it's unbelievable. I can be focusing one moment on something that's bugging me about the world or about this or about that, and I go, "What are you doing, Dusty? You have the power of all this, of the universe running through you," which is not just me, but I have to claim my own.
Equally distributed.
And all I have to do is shift my thoughts, my feeling, and look at the divine in whatever form that it is available to me, whether it's Ruka Dikudsha or whatever it is. And then all of a sudden I'm uplifted just by changing my own inner dialogue.
Exactly. And there's where the forgiveness process comes in. If you actually do that step-by-step worksheet process, the things that tend to come up that have been so powerfully reinforced, perhaps generation after generation after generation, experience after experience after experience, relationship after relationship, that it's so powerfully reinforced that it's literally a very intense field, that each time you apply forgiveness to that field that is inside your own mind, inside your own brain cell structure, you weaken that field with forgiveness. You weaken it until, instead of it being this giant trauma-based voice that, oh my God, what am I thinking about this for? Each time you apply forgiveness, you weaken, you weaken, you weaken, until that whole perspective, that whole block of quantum energy just collapses. And all of a sudden, you know, over the years in working with people with the worksheet process, the most common response I get to somebody after they do the actual core step in the forgiveness process, there's a question in the worksheet that says, so how does that situation you started this worksheet on look to you now? The most common response that I've gotten over the years is, yeah, it's really silly that I even had any concern about it, because it's nothing. But that doesn't happen until that huge trauma energy has been deflated through forgiveness. And then, yeah, it is nothing. But it wasn't nothing. Well, it was all energized and locked in, and I believed it and reinforced it and lived out of it the way my generations taught me to, the way my power person taught me to. And the beauty of, you know, recognizing the power person dynamic, that I can apply forgiveness there and remove it. And then I'll scratch my head and go, what the hell did I ever listen to that voice for? It's nothing. It means nothing. But while it's tight and integrated from experience, it can be tough to get loose from.
Yes, and I have to say, it's a constant. One of the graces of having, I guess, a the consciousness mind is that in there each moment, I mean, it's a moment-to-moment world. People say, oh, we have a nice day. Well, I hope you're having a nice moment because it's a moment-to-moment thing, and I find that I'm really more and more waking up. I mean, I hope I live another 100 years. Maybe I'll figure something out. But it's moment to moment, and it's so much about my inner attitude and my thoughts, and I can get caught in some darker nets that are minor things.
Because they're the fields, that are in the mind.
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
And there's outside fields that I feel. I just happen to be one of those that really pick up on that kind of stuff, like it or not. But all that really I have to do, unless I'm in intractable pain, and even then you can do some stuff, but it's harder, is, okay, well, I'm going to focus on my breathing. And all this, the graces of all this stuff that I already know, everybody listening probably knows, I know you do, and et cetera. And if I focus, then just change things and go, oh yeah, there's this beauty, there's this love, there's this, some aspect of Rukh is oh yeah, and I can get into the magic and the beauty, and the love in a moment. And then I can forget in a moment and wind up going back to the remolds inside my own head somewhere.
Right.
And
when one of those energy patterns move, when those energy patterns of the gobbledygook move, one of the thoughts that's attached to that is, here's something you need to figure out, and if you can just figure it out, everything will be okay. And that, in our codependence workshop we offer, is the number one pseudo-solution of the non-being mind, if I could just figure it out. And there's nothing that anybody can figure out in regard to those things. But what you can do is you can collapse it through forgiveness. Every time you come across it, you apply forgiveness, you can collapse it. Otherwise, people will spend years and years and years and years and years and years trying to figure out something that can't be figured out.
You
look at all the energetic
really
dynamics.
That is so good. I mean, as a tool, it's like mice running around in a little circle or something like that.
Exactly.
You're right. And you go, you collapse it. You go, I'm running around in a circle, and there's this process of forgiveness, and you remove that and go into a focus on something that has beauty and love on it. And I'm finding, at least for me, that it really is. It's just micro moment to micro moment sometimes. And it bothers me if I get into some stupid mindset and all of a sudden I pull my head out of my ass an hour later and I've done nothing but run around in that little circle, you know?
Right.
And
it's like a rocking chair.
It's like a rocking chair. And
you
know,
something
new,
but you don't get anywhere.
No, you don't get anywhere. You know, no. You just make ruts in the carpet, you know? There's a tendency, I have a tendency sometimes when I catch this, I used to at least, beat myself up a little bit for it, but anymore it's just like, just switch, you know, remove that, get on with it now, you know. Go ahead.
And if you look at the circumstances in which you beat yourself up, start to look at how that replicates your power person dynamic. And your power person is not there to beat you up, but the circumstances are right in the mind to resonate that quantum field of, I deserve to be beaten up, whatever that looks like, and I'm going to tend to play out. My power person isn't there to do it to me, and I'll do it to myself. And that's just another, quote-unquote, quantum field within the mind to be forgiven, to be collapsed and get free of.
Yes,
until the only thought you have is the thought of the angel in your mind that says you deserve to be treated lovingly, gently, and with respect on every level, thought, word, action, especially by yourself.
Yes, there, that's what I was going to say, especially by yourself. And if you're living alone for the most part, it's about me. And it took me years to figure out. I mean, I realize I'm rambunctious to a fault. It's one of my better and worst characteristics. And so I can't even judge, some of the things I did when I was younger, or middle age even. But more and more, I understand what you just made reference to, that, I can be loving and kind to everybody, and I can forgive people, and I can see the best in them, and da-da-da-da. Now, how about me? Am I doing that for me, too? I mean, I count as well.
One place to apply the tools.
Yes. And so, wow, it's beautiful challenge. And this life is rife with opportunities if we can just move in and with them. And I feel like I access at times some wonderful realms. And there's a line in an old Grateful Dead song that goes, sometimes the light shines all around me, and other times I can barely see. And I like that. It reminds me of, kind of keeps me, okay, and then put your mind and your consciousness where you want it, how you want it, rather than what you don't want. Which is what a lot of us do. We get caught up in what we don't
want. Yeah. Yeah. And there's another song that whenever I hear it, it'll come on every once in a while somewhere, that song that says, wherefore as once I was blind, now I see.
Oh, yeah, that
I always,
one, right.
I always change the words of that song when I hear it to, wherefore, as once I was sighted, now I see. Because if the person were actually blind, everything would be dark. Everything would be dark. But what we think we see, the construct of our mind, we think we see, we're not seeing at all. That's got nothing to do with seeing. That's just a construct projected from brain cells. And so, wherefore, as once I was sighted, like I thought I could see, now I actually see. And I'm collapsing that and moving beyond that into the actuality of the world rather than being stuck in this construct that comes from my particular instrument, that embodies all of my genetic history, all of my environmental experiences, all of my power person dynamics, that I'm actually moving out of what I call sight into actual seeing.
Yeah, nice. That's the amazing grace right there. Yes.
Yes.
Make that shift and look up. And by the way, I this is a quick aside, and I can't go into the detail of it, but when I used to deliver ships, one time we were in this monster storm, and it was just right on the edge of life and death. I mean, there were some things going on that were I can't even tell you the razor's edge. We were to be tipped over this large ship, and all of a sudden, in the midst of the worst crisis, I looked out, and I this may sound whack job to some people, but I saw the amazing grace. This thing, there was this silver sparkle in the ocean, and there was this stillness, even though the waves were still giant, and we were about to hit broadside with a wave twice as big as we were, and there was only two of us on the ship. And I could see it and feel it. And
that's vision. That's vision. That's what we're designed to live in. That's true sight. And it's always available. Unless our mind is so busy displaying its hostility and fear that we can't find it.
Yeah, and you know that I've heard it said that one, when people are, like, say, on their deathbed, so to speak, and it's usually not the things they did, it's the things they didn't do. And for me right now, it's about staying focused on that amazing grace, if you will, but any name like that. I don't want to live in regret that I just spent 10 years of running around in the same little dark rut or something. I mean, I make an effort every day to reinvent myself out of all that, and it works, but I still have to do it. It seems like it's never ending, but I'm getting better at living in the moment, and I mean moment. And when I'm not in the moment, I'm usually unconscious, caught in some, you know, kind of background inner dialogue, you know, that means nothing. And what a gift that in any micro moment we can change, I mean, given that we have the belief in the tools and the blah, 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 but we can turn and face this light and be a part of whatever it is. I mean, there's a beauty that runs through all of us that's beyond our pay grade.
Absolutely.
I want to access that in me as this life before I shuffle off to Buffalo. I want to know that I really have been living that. And at times I've just been in miraculous situations. Those are times. And right now I'm down to a micro moment that's being forced upon me by a life and death situation where I'm trying to fight off of some people I can only call pirates or something like that. You know, it's out of my own volition in the middle. And it fills me with great hope and joy to know that we can do that. We can do that.
And the challenge of it, you know, that old saying about when you're out there in the swamp up to your sweet bippy and alligators, it can be hard to remember that the objective was to drain the swamp. And that to me, again, is the importance of that step-by-step forgiveness process, that it weakens those fields so they're not an option in the moment. It's like, you know, I can remember when, but it's just not where I live anymore. So.
Right. Right, and there are certain aspects, if you go to more or less to the core of things, that are continuous. Doesn't mean that it's like an energy. That doesn't mean energy is going to look the same. And that's one reason how we get caught in our dukkha, which translates basically to the pain and excuse the language shit of life.
The illusions.
Yes, the illusions. And it's amazing. When we were back in Atlanta, and I realized it was the times.
Got about 30 seconds.
Oh, okay. Well, at any rate, it was. I'm just going to say much love to you, Ben, and to Jeannie and everybody listening. And go for it, folks. We can do it. We can do it. We can.
Yeah.
Each of us. Yeah.
Extending the love in your direction, my friend. Appreciate you. Blessings. Take care, everybody.
Okay. You too.